casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Marty's favorite day of the month. It is the latest possible day here in July. You made it, Marty.
Why is that? Favorite day of the month?
You've been pushing the end of July? You've been pushing late July as long as I can remember. And we finally got here.
Hey, the month of August, a great month. It's my birthday month. So I feel like this is always the woohoo, let's get going. And I've got three golf tournaments coming up in August. And, you know, one of them's the Amherst alumni. One of them's the Sabres alumni, the Jim Kelly tournament. So, yeah, so it's going to be a fun month of August. But let's close out July with a bang and with a little bit of Sabres news in this late July edition.
Yeah, little Devon Levi news on this day.
Yeah, little Devon Levi signed a two-year deal. He was the last free agent, basically remaining restricted free agent, the last contract to settle for the Sabres. So after Connor Timmins signed his deal before going to arbitration, Devon Levi was the one left, and he's got a two-year deal. Look, it's a two-year deal. It averages about a little over $800,000, you know, less than $800,000 in year one. Just a little less than $900,000 in year two. It's very standard. The one big thing with this contract, it is a one-way contract. And I think it's just one way for the Sabres to just go to Devon and understand the situation that he is waiver exempt at the start of the season this year. He most likely, unless something happens and he plays out of his mind and whatever, but he's probably going to go to Rochester to start the season, and then the Sabres will evaluate from that point. So it's basically telling them, you're a big part of our plan. You're still a big part of this organization. We'll, you know, you'll get your money. It's a one-way deal. And look, continue to work towards the goal to being an NHL player. So I think that's, you know, a lot of teams do that, and it's just one way to I don't want to say give him more of a positive look to it. I think it's bet on yourself. Let's go, but you'll still get paid in a good way.
Considering he played seven games for the Sabres right out of college at the end of a season.
Yes.
Are you surprised that he's sitting here on 39 total NHL games as he embarks upon his third full professional season upcoming?
So am I surprised at this point? No, because I mean, 39 games in your first two plus, and I use Devon Levi and say almost two pro years, right? Because the seven games at the end of his college year, like, I don't count that as a pro year. It was late in the year. You played some games, played well. The Sabres, you know, got themselves in a good position, and you know, things happen. But so I'm looking at this as that was still his college year, and he's played two full pro seasons now, and he's played almost 40 games. So I think it's a good number. I didn't have 40 games played in my first two pro seasons, you know, in my development, and nowhere near that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of goalies that, you know, it takes until year three, year four before you get yourselves going. And so I'm not surprised looking back at it, but I do have a sense of, did it go according to what the expectation and what we thought it was going to happen? Comes in, plays a seven games. The next year plays 23. It's like, hey, you know, Devon Levi could be the guy to just continue to be an NHL player. The hype. And look, the hype is great. Levi is a really good goalie. He proved it again last year in the AHL. He's one of the top AHL goalies, you know, can be at a, you know, continue to grow and be an NHL guy. But as the hype of when he came out of Northeastern and got to Buffalo and where we are now, is it matching? No, but it's not a problem. It's part of development. It's part of everybody's roadmap to the NHL.
Unrelated, it's Linus Allmark's birthday today. Devon Levi does have over 100 pro games, 68 in the AHL, 39 in the NHL. So that's probably the real number that you should focus on here for actual, you know, hours earned on the trade, getting better over this stretch. Now,
playoff experiences in the AHL,
a little bit of playoff experience, yeah. I'm curious whether you think this matters at all. The fact that it's looking like when he assumes the role as the number one in Rochester this year, he will have a partner that will be his age or younger, as opposed to of having had the Housers, Tokarskis, Sandstroms of the world. You know what I mean?
I think so, like, that's a good transition.
What is that like? What is that like for a currently 23? He'll flip right before the calendar turns this year to 24.
I think it's a good transition now. You are not a prospect that needs a veteran with you. You are still a prospect, but you're taking a step forward to where you need to be. Look, Devon Levi needs to, I don't want to say grow because it's not the right word, but he needs to have this leadership, this top player, this MVP kind of mentality. And I don't think that you can have that if you're saying, oh, we need to surround him with good veteran, like goaltending and somebody to be there. I remember my second year in Rochester, I had Tom Draper. First year, mm-hmm. I had Mike Bills. My second year, I had Tom Draper. It was good. Started the third year, who was I with? Mikko Noronen. It was me and Mikko Noronen. I was that time where it was Marty. You now are going into your third full season pro, third full season in Rochester. We don't need to give you a, for lack of a better word, a babysitter. Somebody mm-hmm. that, is going to be the veteran sitting next to you. It's time for you to figure it out. It's time for you to be that guy, maybe for somebody else a little bit, but figure it out. And I think this is just the right approach to it as well. And also, we look at the contract and I mean, if you were to ask me when Levi came into the league out of college, his second contract is going to be basically a league minimum 2-year deal. Mm-hmm. I would have thought, I kind of don't think that's going to happen, but maybe it's all about development. It's all about patience. And this could work out really well for the Sabres in a way that, okay, let's see what happens with Luukkonen and Lyon this year. But at the end of next year, you probably can move one, could open up a spot for Levi. He's going to be making less than $900,000 in an NHL payroll, and could have a big role mm-hmm. in 2 years from now with the Sabres. I think it could work out really well for the Sabres to just buy a little bit more time.
He's also 1-0 lifetime in games when home fans prematurely toss teddy bears during a shootout. Yeah. And the only reason that is.
And he didn't give up any goals that game.
He did
game.
Not. There is a reason to mention something like this. It was one of my favorite Levi moments because he was so locked in, hadn't given up anything through the game, through overtime, and in the shootout. But then because the fans, hadn't had the opportunity to toss the Bears, they threw them onto the ice in the shootout, which still had to continue. And for him, Levi, to stay locked in that moment and then preserve it, yeah, I get it. It's just a humorous little tidbit. But that was one of those moments this year where I was like, wow, he really stayed focused. And there were many of those moments in the playoffs. Unfortunately, team-wise, they just, they stubbed their toe as hard as you possibly could in the biggest game of the year, which was the finale, in the Laval series.
In the Laval series,
And there were a couple of games in that series where, Levi didn't have it. But he had it more than he didn't in the playoffs. And that's another step here. So
does he have things to work on? 100%. I could go his technical game, some of the things that he does in the net, some of the things that may have worked at the AHL level, but I don't know translate really well to the NHL level. Now you're trying to try put it all together. How mm-hmm. do you continue to work on your game? So he does have a lot of work still ahead of him. This is obviously not a, man, you've arrived type of contract.
Right.
You know, it's a, hey, we still love you. You're still part of this team. And look, Jim on social media says it's a one-way overpay. Like, okay, so let me ask you, Jim, this question. I'm talking to Jim in the airwaves right now, but what's a good value for Devon Levi at the AHL level? Let's just say what he's done at the AHL level, he's probably a $450,000, $500,000 goalie at the AHL level with the level of play that he's done. So what's the problem with giving him a one-way deal that's going to pay him a couple hundred thousand more than that? And if he gets called up during the year, let's say you were to give him a two-way deal and his salary in the AHL was 500, and then he gets called up a few times during the year, he's going to be making that 775 or whatever anyway. So to me, it's a way to say, Devon, you're a big part of this organization. We all understand that you are waiver exempt again this year. And you know, you don't say that to him, but I think it's understood. Probably going to start in Rochester. There's a lot of things to work on, but you've earned it. With the way that he's played in Rochester, especially last year, and the attitude that he had, he only played 9 NHL games. He came out of college and he played 7 in the matter of less than a month. And the year after, he played 23, and last year played 9. Mm-hmm. And didn't cause a stir, played really well, went to the playoffs, had, you know, up and down moments maybe, but learning moments. That, to me, I have no problem with saying, give you a one-way deal, and everything's going to be going in the right direction.
Ryan Johnson, for comparison's sake, age 24, similar amount of pro experience to Devon, can also be sent down and not require waivers this year. He signed a 3-year contract this summer with Buffalo. The first year is a two-way deal.
Yes.
He'll make $775 in the NHL should he be there. He'll make $350 in the American League. But in each of the next 2 seasons, when he's no longer waiver exempt, it's $775 regardless of where he's playing. So you can look at go to Puckpedia, waste a day, click on your favorite up-and-comer and see what they make in the NHL and also in the American Hockey League. It's a terrific resource for us. We thank them.
They do great work.
That has always been the case with these entrepreneurs, almost caretakers of the game, you know, through all these
variations
of websites that we've had over the years. And it only exists because they truly care to want to get the information into the hands of fans. And the fans crave it, and there's no denying it.
So Dustin Wolf, right, had an entry-level deal, and he played, you know, in the American League and then a few games with the Calgary Flames. And then at the end of this entry-level deal, he signed a 2-year deal, a one-way 2-year deal for $850. Mm-hmm. And last year was year one of that. That was his first year in the NHL, right? Big year in the NHL.
Standout
year. But Calgary Flames did the same thing with Dustin Wolf. Right. They said, we'll give you a one-way deal, $850, or I mean the $50,000 or whatever, it doesn't matter. But they had a spot for Dustin Wolf at the NHL level, where I don't really know that the Sabres have a spot right now for Devon Levi. Mm-hmm. But that could all change by November 1st. That could all change by December 1st. And it could be a year from now when Devon is making the jump to the NHL.
Yeah.
But I think Dustin Wolf is a good comparable to Levi to a certain extent, size-wise, contract-wise, age-wise. The big thing is Dustin Wolf went on and went back-to-back goalie of the year at the AHL level. Mm-hmm. And I think if that was something, you know, I'm Kevin Adams today. I'm calling Devon. I say congratulations on the deal. Very happy that we got that done. And one of the goals this year would be that regardless of where you are, AHL, mm-hmm. NHL, that it's all about quality. And if you are going to be in the AHL for the season, like that goalie of the year award, you know, that's attainable. That's reachable. And I think that would be a goal for Levi if he is to be in Rochester all season long.
And he was close to being top goaltender in the American Hockey League last year. Statistically, throughout the entirety of the year, he was top five basically in every meaningful category. So it was, by all measures, a very successful year for Devin as the number
one. And often it's an older goalie, right, that wins that. And that happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like Michael DiPietro won it last year. Hunter Shepard won it the year before. And then Dustin Wolf back-to-back year. Logan Thompson is one of those that have won it. Like there's... Mm-hmm. There has been some, let's go back down to 1998, 1999. Oh, here's my name on the list here, Duffer. I won that award in 1998, 99, second year in the AHL. So yeah, so it's attainable. It's something, it's a goal to say, I want to be the best in the second best league in the world.
How's the Hawks goaltending? We have them as our team of the day. As you can tell, I'm not particularly hyping this segment. We do have Shayna Goldman at the bottom of the hour. Now that is something to stay tuned for, but the Hawks.
Talking about contracts, maybe we'll talk about the best and the worst contracts in the NHL because the Athletic put out a list out there and I have some questions for Shayna when it comes to that list. Yeah. So, you know, we'll have fun with Shayna. But yes, the Blackhawks goaltending, I'll say this, I'm saying a little prayer for Spencer Knight right now. I'm looking at the defense core of the Blackhawks going into this year, and it's going to be a tough year. They were already, where were they last year? 31st in goals against. A little bit worse than the Sabres. Sabres were 3.5, Blackhawks were 3.56. I'm hoping the Sabres take a step forward in goals against, and I don't see how the Chicago Blackhawks take a step forward. I think they take a step back. Like, their defense is bad going in.
Well, it's very young.
Yeah, very young, but it's not NHL ready. And like, it may be good in 2-3 years, mm-hmm. but, you know, they traded Seth Jones away. They bought out TJ Brody. They lost Alec Martinez. Like, they just, their defense is going to be young, inexperienced, and overwhelmed a lot this year.
What do you think, though, of their goaltending? Like,
I really like their tandem. Spencer Knight and Soderblom, I really like it. Who knows what's happening with Laurent Brossoit? He was supposed to be out 5 to 6 weeks last year with a meniscus surgery and then had to have another surgery. I'm not expecting him to be in the cards this year. Who knows what happened, but I really like Soderblom. He would have been on my list of goalies to say, hey, you know what, this could be a... You know, the Sabres went for Alex Lyon, and Soderblom obviously was an RFA with the Chicago Blackhawks, signed a contract, but he was one of those goalies that I really like the size and everything. Spencer Knight was always a guy that was thought of to be the next level, right? Like Team USA, college, like maybe very much in the Devin Levi mold, right? Mm-hmm. Of saying like you have international hockey experience, college hockey experience, now pro experience, do well. Sign a big contract, but then Florida used him to be able to acquire Seth Jones and win a second straight Stanley Cup. But I like their goalie tandem. But you look at Spencer Knight last year when he came in, his first few games, you know, 39 save on 41 shots, 45 saves on 47 shots. Like it was, but I think he's going to give up a lot of goals. I think it would be hard for him to keep his goals against average under 3. I think that's going to be over 3, but his save percentage and his, goals save above expectation may be good, but it doesn't translate into wins.
What's his record at 5 p.m. on a Tuesday in season openers?
5 p.m. on a Tuesday, so that's
the Hawks and Panthers NHL kickoff. Yes,
that's the start of the
season. Spencer Knight against his former team.
0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0 at 5:10. At 5:15, it could be 27, like 60 goals against average, right? Because Florida's going to come out swinging, and I wouldn't be surprised if they score a couple of goals early on Spencer Knight and the Blackhawks and overwhelm them. But we'll see.
What are the odds Andrei Burakovsky leads the team in scoring?
I'm not going to say
because
the odds are great.
He is their highest paid active player.
He is their highest paid. Connor Bedard is going to lead them in scoring again this year. Led him in scoring the year before. No, actually, it was, yeah, Bedard 61 points the year before. He did have 67. People were saying, oh, Bedard had a bad year this year. He went up 6 points. And I think Connor Bedard could get 80-plus points this year, no problem. Burakovsky is going to get a lot of those points with Bedard because I would assume they're going to play together and with Ryan Donato, who had a great year last year with 31 goals. But again, after that, it's a really hush-posh of, like, you know, Nazar and Bertuzzi and Dickinson. Like, I'm not
good players.
Yeah. I don't hate their forward groups. I just think the kids are exciting.
The kids are going to be really excited.
Like, Teravainen had a decent year. I don't like. I have always liked Teuvo Teravainen and the skills that he shows. But yeah. I think you've got a little bit of the same type of you know, like players that make the middle six or your group. You do have a stud in Connor Bedard. And you were able to acquire Burakovsky and Donato. If he continues to play the way that he played last year, it will be a good first line. So mm-hmm. I would expect that Bedard's going to go probably 80-plus points. I would hope he goes to a point a game and over this year in year three of the Connor Bedard experiment in Chicago.
They, like a few other teams, probably plan to do a lot more with all of their cap space. Anaheim,
the 18 million that they have.
Anaheim at least was able to get Granlund and Kreider, but and you politely said they acquired Burakovsky. That was a flat-out salary dump by the Seattle Kraken. So I can't
They traded him Joe Valeno and then they bought out Geleno in Seattle, right? Valeno. Like, let's get rid of everybody. Burakovsky, you're gone. We'll acquire somebody, buy him out so we don't even have to worry about it. Like, yeah. This was a very, very big salary dump, as you pointed out.
But as you rewind to in season last year when Rantanen started on the move.
Yes.
Well, is he going to sign in Carolina? What if they just rent him for the end of the season? Like, who are the teams that are going to go after Rantanen when he becomes a UFA? Yeah. And everybody was like, well, Chicago's a big market. They're going to have all the room in the world to do it.
Yeah.
And at the very least, you could start projecting someone, maybe not Rantanen, but yeah, the Hawks actually do have a lot of money. They are a major market. They have Bedard for whatever that's worth at this point in time. Clearly, I don't think it's a draw to veteran players just yet. But here they are. They didn't really do much. They're leaning on their youth, and they're not going to be spending that $18 million, which is fine. I mean, again, you can pick your analogy. Like, they know they're not winning the cup this year, so why stupidly just spend an extra $20 million when you don't have to?
Duffer, not only is there $18.5 million of space this year, in a year from now, they have Burakovsky, Bertuzzi, Teravainen, Donato signed. Now, obviously, Bedard's going to sign and Nazar's going to sign, whatever. But they have four forwards under contract for in a year from now. They have three defensemen under contract for in a year from now. And one of them is Alex Vlasic, right? You mentioned Burakovsky's their highest paid player on Puckpedia right now. Their highest paid player is technically Shea Weber. Shea Weber's contract with 1 year left, $7.8 million, is a Chicago Blackhawks contract. I am starting to wonder what the plan is in Chicago. Like, you're going to have to start, like, building. Like, we talked about Carolina. They're set for years. Carolina have everybody signed for years. That's going to be the team for the next 3-4 years, the same. Chicago, it's a one-year experimentation, and we'll see what we have. And now they have a new coach in Jeff Blashill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to be a weird year for me in Blackhawks land.
Could be an amazing year for some lucky individual. Enter the Key to the Arena sweepstakes for your chance to win Sabres and Bandits season memberships and tickets to all the live events. Enter to win a Key to the Arena, including this Sabres Bandits ticket membership package for 25-26 and a pair of tickets to five upcoming KeyBank Center live events. You can enter to win this one-of-a-kind prize at sabres.com/key. Shayna Goldman coming up next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Back half of Sabres Live here on a Thursday. Marty has already shown great enthusiasm for the upcoming month because it is his birthday month. When is your
birthday? It's also U.S. Open month for Shayna because of tennis. So
Shayna,
that is awesome.
When is your birthday month?
I'm May. I'm a Gemini. Can't you tell?
Mm-hmm.
No, wait. So So it's Marty's birthday month. We have hardcore tennis, which I think we both agree is kind of the fave, and the U.S. Open at the end of it. So now the only true solution is you getting a vacation to the U.S. Open, right, for your birthday.
I mean, I would love that, but it doesn't usually work well for me. Even when I was with the Rangers, Shayna, I didn't go to U.S. Open. I don't know. It didn't work. It's like getting ready for school with the kids and everything. It just gets a little crazy. Also, I mean, if you're in Buffalo, and because we're going to adopt you as a Bills fan now, so Hard Knocks is starting on the 5th, right? So that's at Bills training camp. So I feel like my month of August is going to be like so much fun. I did some plumbing work at the house last week. I was telling producer Jeff, I'm doing some electrical work at the house today. I'm all in. Like, this is going to be a great month.
I love it because I feel like all of a sudden I kept thinking August, September, and I'm like, wait, July didn't even end yet. And I'm thinking this last week, and it's like you get to this point and you just speed through till the end. And like, if you go shopping, because I was, you know, shopping for crafts, it's all Halloween. Did I buy stuff for Halloween? Yes. Yes, because I'm a sucker. They got me. So I'm like, summer's over, and I like that we're enthusiastic about August. We have to respect August.
I have two questions, and then you and Marty can take the segment. How are you handling the heat? And what will be the beverage of choice at the U.S. Open for you this year?
Oh, it's the honey deuce every day of the week. I don't care that they have like Aperol spritzes, and that's nice. I can have that any day. I need the honey deuce. And the days I'm not there, I'm just going to make them because I have 3,000 cups now because I'm hoarding them. How do I handle the heat? I stay in water. I am not a heat person at all. I don't do like very well in the heat. So I just like read books in the pool and I'm very happy. Like, I tried doing embroidery by the pool yesterday and I had to go in the water within like 10 minutes.
Okay. When you say you read books, do you also bring like electronics, like an iPad or a phone? Do you read hockey articles? Because we got a doozy that dropped on The Athletic, Shayna. The 10 best and 10 worst contracts. We just had the Sabres sign Devon Levi to a 2-year deal, and in 2 years, we could say Devon Levi, best contract, making just under $900,000. And who knows? He could be the number one goalie of the Sabres, right? Who knows? Like, Dustin Wolf is making, what, $850,000? He's, you know, a standout in Calgary. So I like to start with the worst contracts because, obviously, I think Dom put Jonathan Huberdeau as number one. I was a little surprised with Chandler Stephenson just because Duffers always love Chandler Stephenson with Vegas and still performed well. So what do you make out of Sam Bennett also on that list of the worst contracts for the upcoming year? Like, I was surprised by that as well. So what did you take out of the worst contracts moving into the 25-26 seasons?
There's always a contract that I feel like there's no better motivator than spite. So Dom's going to put it there. I remember like the days of Nick Suzuki being on here and people freaking out at him and then Nick Suzuki popping off. And it's like, yes, now it's good. So I think Sam Bennett will take that spite because naturally he's reading all of these articles while he's celebrating his cup win and will prove him wrong. I think one of the more interesting contracts to me on this list, the more interesting ones are the defensive contracts. And I look at two in particular, like Cody Ceci, we expect to be there. It's Nick Hague and it's Ryan Pulak. And I think Ryan Pulak, like, to me, was the guy on the Islanders' blue line, and then Dobson became that. And you think of him more of like this like pairing, right? It's Pelikan-Pulak. You think of them together. They're this great entity together, and they're a really good shutdown second pair. And I think they were, both of them had two of the more cost-effective contracts. His game declined so much over this last year, and Pulak is a guy that I thought improved a lot when Petrangelo took over. So it's interesting to see how his game just didn't translate as well under a full season of him. I'm so curious how it changes now with different assistant coaches coming in, because it's something we talk about all the time, right? Like, what's the value of an assistant coach? How much do they bring? How much input do they get? So I'm curious how that turnover will help and if he can rebound. The other one that stands out is Nick Hague, because to me, a year ago, I think we all projected him to be this like really interesting player that Vegas was going to have to get rid of just to balance the books. And it all depended on how his game went this past season. And it went pretty far down. Like, he trended down a lot within a really good system. This isn't like the Islanders, where it's like the team is trending down, therefore the player is as a part of it, right? Like, the Golden Knights are still good, but his third pair of minutes were pretty tough. I'm curious how it ages, because we've seen in the last year players go to Nashville and regress. So how can they make that trend stop with Hague when they already have someone like Brady Shea on this list?
Is it the same thing with Ivan Provorov? Because he's on the list at number two. He was a UFA, right? And Columbus decided to give him a 7-year deal at $8.5 million, kind of taking him off the table. But everybody's had that cap space. So is this one of those situations where Columbus gave him maybe a little extra money to keep him, knowing they overpaid? But, I mean, you have the cap space and better use it.
Yeah, like, two things can be true here. Like, he was a good fit there and they have the space, but the contract is still bad, especially when you look at it relative to the other deals being signed. And I think we all thought defensemen were going to get overpaid this year, and we thought Gavrikov would get some like astronomical number, and he didn't. So that kind of changes the tone of things. Yes, you're going to have guys getting overpaid like Dumoulin and CeCe, but when you get a contract done early, in theory, you would think it's to avoid paying market price, right? On July 1st, the market price is going to be set. So if you're working ahead of time, you're trying to get under that curve before the curve is set. And it just isn't happening. So I think that's a problem. I think the long term of it with his age in mind is kind of a problem. I don't think highly enough of him to take better strides. I think what he is what he is, and that's fine and it works for now. But in those later years, it might become a problem. So it's not a good contract. I don't see him outperforming it at any point in it, but the Blue Jackets at least know what they're getting in him.
Since we're still on the Blue Jackets,
yeah,
what is ever going to happen with Severson and his deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in this unique position of like having all of this cap space, so they can weather the storm better than others and say, okay, well, we paid you to be this top four guy and you're not that, and that's okay, right? And just roll with Fabro and Werenski and let them cook and see what young guys can come up around them. And then eventually maybe they can send that contract off, because there are teams right now that need cap, right? They're below the cap floor. They're going to need to take on more. In 2 or 3 years, say the Blue Jackets no longer have all that cap flexibility and need to get rid of him, I think you'll always have someone ready to take on a bad contract. We see a lot of rebuilding teams out there, and maybe more teams will open up their cap retention slots and use them a little bit better now, because, you know, you can't do the double retention within 75 days. Like, there's going to be different rules. So I think they'll find a way to move that contract if need be. But it's not a great starting point when they're not even at their window of contention. It's just opening now after this last year of progress to have those two contracts as weights on the back end.
Yeah.
Now let's move to the best contracts. And I think the 10 contracts that Dom put out there on The Athletic, they're really good contracts. But Shayna, how is Tage Thompson not on that list of best contracts? I mean, this is year three of a 7-year deal, paying him just over $7 million. He could score 50 this year. I mean, he had 44 last year, and the power play was not good. Like, I think it's easy for him to get to 40, and he could definitely get to 50 and $7 million. Like, in my opinion, he's one of the best valued contract in the NHL.
Okay. If he is a center, I fully agree with you. If he's a winger, I don't think so. I drop value a little bit there, because I think we look at wingers a lot differently than we do centers, right? Because someone like Sam Reinhart plays wing. He can jump to center if need be, but I feel like the Panthers got a little bit of a discount because he's a winger at this point in his career. Tage Thompson was signed as a center to earn the accents back and get back to our guy Tajay. I would like to see him at center, and I look at the Sabres lineup too, and I still think that they're better if he's down the middle. So if he can combine all of these elements that we know he has, right? The electric scoring, and oh my God, does he have that? The threat on the power play, the defensive improvements, which I think we saw over the last year too, because that was an area of his game that it was a high risk, high reward style from him. if he can do all that and play center, I think he's going to get back onto this list 100%. But if he does it as a winger, or he doesn't, it's one other element missing, right? He plays center, but the defense is still terrible. Or he plays the wing and the scoring isn't as strong as it should be. Like, that's what's going to work against him.
Number one on that list is Jack Hughes. So Jack Hughes, with the injury concern, I get if he's healthy and plays 82 games, but the injury concern is always there. Are you feeling that Jack Hughes will be a guy that will consistently now be healthy and produce, or are we rolling the dice? If you're Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey and, you know, Sheldon Keefe, you're rolling the dice starting every year, not knowing if you're going to have him be your top line center for the full season and into the playoffs.
I'm not at that point yet where they're rolling the dice, but I think if he has another injury, especially anything to one of those shoulders, that injury prone tag is never going to come off. Yeah. But I still look at him and I think of how much he grew last year too. I think Sheldon Keefe is really good at turning really good offensive players into two-way threats. I think that's maybe the biggest strength he brings as a coach, right? And you see how Austin Matthews became the sulky guy under him. So I think Jack Hughes became a better all-around threat. Plus, we know he has the offensive ability. Plus, we know he's good in the playoffs. That if he can be healthy, you know, you're looking at one of the best first-line centers in the league. Under the McKinnon and McDavid tier, like, he could be right there, I think. But it'll be interesting to see, does he do it? Like, now we're saying if already. So it's that, like, little shred of doubt. So that's the one thing to keep an eye on if there's any injuries this year. But the 2 and 3 on that list might be my favorite ones because they're those pesky all situation wingers. Like, that is the kind of, if I'm building a hockey team, I want 12 Brandon Hagels and Seth Jarvis's. Like, that is what I want. If I was,
I didn't want to bring Brandon Hagel up because then the Duffer's hat will like go up and explode. Like, there'll be steam coming out of those ears because he's always been a Hagel fan.
There's just going to be heart emojis floating across the screen. That's all.
And you know what?
Unicorns. Jeff, unicorn for Brandon Hagel. We need to get it done.
Anytime he comes up, you know, like in SpongeBob when he says, like, imagination and the rainbow appears between his hands, like, that's what we need. But hey, I think the Sabres could have Brandon Hagel light at this rate. So if Josh Stone, that's what we're all rooting for here. Okay. We want more Hagels. So if we could get Josh Stone to, like, embody that energy more and, like, the pieces are there, then all of a sudden that's going to be the guy.
Marty, you'll be happy to know, but disappointed that I couldn't snap a picture in the spontaneous moment. But when I was riding the metro in L.A., I zipped past a building that said Unicorn Museum. So maybe on my next trip back, which will be sooner rather than later, knowing me, I'll do a little bit of research. I did want to ask, based on, and this is a question for both of you, since we're heavy into contract discussion and hopefully, in this case, projecting another good contract. It's July 31st. Alex Tuch does not have his extension yet. What would a good extension look like for Alex Tuch? Both of you, please.
It's tough because now I'm looking at it and I go, is Tage Thompson the bar for wingers, right? Like, it's different than it was before with him. Like, if he's the number one winger, technically, right? Then, like, Tuck is your number two. But I feel like for an all-situation threat, because I do like how Tuck can be that, you know, disruptive power killer. If you could get something in the $8 million range, that's pretty good, right? And I think you have to take cap percentage and apply that instead of saying, okay, an internal cap is going to be a flat number because of all the growth that we're going to see. I think something in the $8 million range is like the ideal vibe check. I wouldn't want to go any higher than that because, in my opinion, I think Alex Tuch on a contender is your second best winger, not your first.
Do you give him 7 years? Because I think for me, he's going to be 30 at the end of this season. So starting next year when the extension would kick in, that's 30 years old. I wouldn't have a problem giving him 7 years as a 30-year-old. I think that between 30 and 35, he'll still produce at a high level and play in every aspect of the game, penalty kill and all of that. But would you hesitate to give him 7 years? And I think eight and a half, that gets it done for me. Let's move on. Boom, we're good. But are you worried about the term, which could be 7 or 8 years?
I would not want to go eight. I don't like 8-year contracts. If from a team perspective, like I'm generally someone that roots for the player getting the bag. If they get an 8-year deal, great for them. But if we're talking from a team perspective, is that what you should do? I like that 8-year contracts are going to be out because I think they age poorly and then it like turns fans on the players and it's not their fault. They took a good contract. They always should. So I think 7 years is fine. I would try to keep it to six. I really like a 6-year term, and I feel like we're seeing a couple of them. Like when Ehlers comes out and he doesn't go for like that maximum deal, I'm like, okay, this is interesting to me. I think six could be the sweet spot for the Sabres, and then I think you could do 8-5. I think if you're doing seven, I would try to get the number to eight.
What about 4 times 10?
That's bold. I think that would be so fun. Listen, I'm here for these short-term deals. They're such a risk, and you see it with guys like Gavrikov, how well it pays off, right? Because he gets that big deal now. But then you look at the other side of it and someone like Orlov went for that shorter term deal and it obviously burned him because in 2 years with the Canes, he wasn't what they needed him to be.
But he still got paid in his next deal.
With the Sharks.
Right. It's a nice place to live.
It's you know what? I feel like, and the vibes are right. The vibes there, if you're going to go to any rebuilding team, that is the place to be.
Dylan Sandberg got a nice deal. It was a lot more than what the Jets were offering in arbitration. They had a $2.5 million 1 year deal in arbitration. He gets 5.75. We may not get any arbitration hearings at all this year because Nick Robertson's the last one, and who knows if that happens. What'd you think of Sandberg and that 1 year deal at 5.75?
I thought he was excellent last year for the Jets. I think he was maybe their most important defenseman. I think he is an elite shutdown defenseman. And I think sometimes we struggle quantifying that in terms of like dollars and cents because you don't have the flashy scoring. But you look around the league and see the deals like the Gus Forslings of the world and go, those deals can pay off if there's someone that's that good. And I think you're getting him in year one of that deal. I mean, I'm sorry, year two of that role.
Yeah.
It's good. I think he could have pushed for more, so I don't have an issue with it. I think it's going to age fine. It's what's that next contract going to look like? But I think he's excellent.
I did say 1 year, but it's three. 3 years at
3 years,
five, seven,
yeah.
Five. Yes.
That's the thing that's tricky, right? Because now he's 30 years old going for his next contract, I think. So that's where things might get a little bit dicier. But again, if we start seeing the league trend towards those shorter contracts, it's totally fine too.
Details are important. Thank you, Marty, for the clarification. Shayna, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next week.
Honey, thanks deuces. For having me.
Sabres Live wrapping up after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy birthday to one of our absolute favorite Sabres alum, Derek Smith, 71 today. Smitty.
Yeah, Derek Smith and I share something very personal and incredible. Not only were we born in the same hometown, because Derek Smith was born in Quebec City, yes. We're born at the same hospital. Now, I mean, there was a few years difference, but still, you know, Derek Smith was, you know, played 244 games with the Sabres over 6 years, 163 points, Duffer. That's a pretty good click for, you know, like a player that nobody really talks about a whole lot. But what a great player, what a great guy, great family, and happy birthday, Smitty.
You've been in such a positive place lately. We have not heard a Martti Rantanen in a while. So allow me to make a cameo in this role. And tell you my frustration watching MLB Network last night. Now, with no sound, I'm just, you know, at the bar having dinner and looking up, and it's trade deadline time, right? So there's all these names and rumors and stuff. Do you think anywhere in any deal, the position of the player in question was mentioned?
Nope.
I'm like, how hard is it to put a P or a 1B or a INF or a OF?
Yeah, infielder, outfielder,
oh my
whatever.
God, I'm like,
catcher.
Cool,
like,
the Mets are still active after getting this guy and this guy. I don't know what position those guys play. Like, what? Just annoying. Like, it's there for information purposes. Give me the info, man.
Give me the info. Pull a mid-game like they did yesterday a bunch of times.
See you tomorrow on Sabres Live.